You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kedd. Ahead this hour, we hear about a Racine program making art and museums more accessible to people who have memory loss. That's in about 15 minutes. But first, our country's millions of miles of roads are connecting people more than ever. But what about the animals that live around these thoroughfares? Research published in Landscape and Urban Planning found around 12% of North America's wild mammals die on roads. In some cases, roads cut off animals from migrating in winter. A form of infrastructure called wildlife crossings can help animals bypass those roads and reconnect wildlife populations. Patricia Kramer is a longtime wildlife researcher, and she spoke with WPR's Lee Rayburn.
Patricia, you've studied each state's data on car accidents involving wildlife. What did you find out specifically about Wisconsin and how it compares with the rest of the country?
Sure. Wisconsin, I looked at 5 years of crash data from your Department of Transportation through 2019, and Wisconsin averages over 20,000 reported crashes with wildlife each year. And that winds up being 16% of all your crashes. That's actually quite large. Most states have the number of recorded crashes with wildlife are well under 10,000. And the average of all the states is about 5% of all their crashes are with wildlife. So you very much have a problem there in Wisconsin.
I think anecdotally, we can all see it as we're driving down the roads at one point or another. But how are U.S. roads affecting animal interactions with the environments around them then, Patricia?
Well, as you see, roads can be pretty lethal because of the traffic on them killing the animals. They also create habitat fragmentation for the animals. We can see how a deer can't get to the other side of the road to access water or food. But there's also smaller animals like salamanders trying to migrate to a pond to lay eggs, or turtles, or black bear. Bear are known to be a bit more skittish of roads than other species of animals. So you may have your black bear restricted to one side or the other. So there's the ability to get to your kitchen, your bedroom, your backyard. For all these animals, if they're in an area with roads, those places are bisected with a bunch of vehicles coming through. So it affects the individual animals that you see, but then over time it can affect the populations and you can lose those populations of animals.
So then what has the buildup of our road infrastructure over time across the country and here in Wisconsin meant for roadkill rates?
Well, I was just looking at your deer population. You're like, to give you an example, in Wisconsin, you have about 2 million deer, and 20,000 crashes is 1% of your deer population killed each year. I think the whitetail will always be okay. There's enough whitetail in our country that their numbers will survive with the crashes. However, when you get to more animals that are a little more rare, like even mule deer, their counterparts in the West, their numbers have been impacted by getting killed on roads. The numbers are much lower, but when you have a smaller number of animals, getting killed on the road can really affect the population. So, for instance, bighorn sheep are always under the pressure of crashes, even if it's just 5 a year in a particular population. If the population is only 25 to 50 animals, it affects them. So we see the smaller populations of animals being much more affected. So there are somewhere around 14 to 17 endangered species that are somewhat affected by getting killed on roads. You can hear stories of Florida panthers, about 20 a year get killed on roads in southern Florida. So that actually winds up being one of the things that dampens the ability of that population to rebound, is that there's no place for them to go without some of them getting killed. So we definitely see the effect on the lower population number animals and the endangered and threatened species.
Patricia Kramer, our guest, wildlife researcher. And Patricia, it was in the mid-90s that I came across wildlife crossings for the first time. It was actually a frog tunnel in Davis, California. And I'm wondering what your research says about their effectiveness.
Oh, well, wildlife crossing structures work, and I will encourage anyone who doubts it or would like to see them in action, if you would go to YouTube and type in the words wildlife crossings. We do research here. Well, actually, I'm all over the country, but I have videos online for Utah wildlife crossings and Montana wildlife crossings, and you can see dozens to hundreds of animals, particularly deer, going through structures. There's also great videos by others showing some of the smaller animals, even down to groundhogs or squirrels going across structures, porcupine, skunks, moose. I even have photos of wolves using structures in Montana. So they very much work. If anyone is a naysayer, it's because they're not informed. But we know they work. There are some animals that are skittish. For instance, pronghorn, bighorn, and elk are the problem children. And you can get a couple of the boys to go through, but to get a herd of all of them with the matriarchs leading, they're very skittish. And we typically have to put in overpasses for them because they don't like to be restricted in their movements. And so what we do in our research with wildlife is we put cameras on the entrances to a lot of these structures and even existing bridges and culverts, and we see who goes through and who's skittish and doesn't want to. And then we compare the results and we tell the engineers, okay, length matters, which means don't make it a long, dark tunnel. Keep it high and wide and open, and you'll get a lot more of the animals. So they very much work for the animals they're designed for.
So the benefits for the animals and the animal population, quite clear. But what does the data say about what we've seen in terms of benefits for humans and our transportation systems?
So I went and added up the cost, the average cost of all the crashes that are reported with wildlife in Wisconsin, and it's over $263 million worth of crashes. So that's property damage, people's injuries, and the value of human lives lost. So if we put wildlife crossings in along with some fences to guide these bigger animals like your white-tailed deer, less people will get in crashes, less people will die, people will save money, maybe your insurance rates would go down, and you might be less fearful going out at dawn and dusk when these animals are out and about. So it winds up being a great win-win situation for everyone.
So, Patricia Kramer, if this is a win-win situation for everyone, why aren't there more of these crossings across the United States?
Well, because departments of transportation have evolved just providing transport for goods and services and people. And their mission statements do not say too much about the environment, connectivity for wildlife, you know, ecological reasons for doing things. And so we are asking departments of transportation to do something they haven't typically considered, and they have to say, well, there's many things we have to consider. So my mission in life is to change the mindset for them to do things that not only benefit wildlife, but will help the transportation department minimize crashes, so the safety aspect, as I've been saying, but also things like, okay, you need to plan for climate change and the water coming through a place like Wisconsin, the runoff in the spring is going to be in greater pulses, greater volumes. And so you need to be planning not just for culverts for water, but placing bridges that encompass more than the 100-year floodplain. And in turn, that will protect the infrastructure from being washed away by the flooding that might happen with climate change. And you might have terrestrial pathways along the stream that now the animals can use, and even people that are anglers can walk along underneath the road and don't have to pop up over it because it was just a culvert. So there's many small things you can do. And then when a big project comes along, like say four laning a two lane highway through a national wildlife refuge or a place where there's a lot of animals, we try to encourage the inclusion of wildlife crossing structures early in the planning. That is so critical, not 5 years down the line, but 15 years down the line, saying, hey, let's put in some bridges for wildlife to get underneath the road. So it's multifaceted working with the transportation departments to consider this, which would save them money and make your road safer for you.
And finally, Patricia Kramer, beyond the intersection of our animals and our roads, what else do you see in your research that needs to be done to preserve wildlife?
We all see development for human homes and subdivisions and box stores going in, and that is always kind of sad for those of us that love wildlife. So I think we need to be aware that we share this planet with a lot of other species that were here before we came and plopped ourselves down. And that means things like driving. I'm going to say this twice. I'll say it now and later. Drive with awareness that there are animals on the side of the road. If you see one deer coming out, there's a good chance she's got a fawn behind her or there's other deer. So slow down. Slow down and be aware. Especially in dawn and dusk, your commuting hours are the same hours the animals commute. Wisconsin has an incredible black bear population. Be aware that if you leave food out or you don't secure your garbage pails, the bears can get habituated to eating your food and may wind up dead. You know, a fed bear is a dead bear. Things like there's pollinators that are even in danger because of traffic. So bees, butterflies, and hummingbirds, you know, plant native flowers in your yard and vegetation that they could use. There's just all kinds of ways to try to bring things back to what it was before we brought ourselves and our infrastructure on the landscape. So being aware and making a wildlife-friendly backyard and keeping things from being attractants to animals that in turn could get them in trouble with humans are some of the big things that I see.
Patricia Kramer, thank you for sharing your research with us.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for your interest.
And that was wildlife researcher Patricia Kramer talking with WPR's Lee Rayburn. Coming up, we talk with the co-founder of an expanding program that aims to make art and art exhibitions accessible to people with early stage memory loss. Have you attended a SPARK program? What was that experience like? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network.